Yes, and everyone, Imola has concluded, and I must say, it surprised me.
I loved it.
It was good, and we have a lot to dive into, all right? So make sure you stick around. If you're new here, make sure you subscribe, or if you're listening to us on an audio platform, do give us a 5-star rating because it really does make a difference to us, and we really appreciate it. We also love it when you leave a comment on Spotify, YouTube, anywhere where you are participating in this podcast. I don't know if that's not the right phrase, but. Yeah, make sure also you check out Box Box Club. We are Box Box Pod, powered by Box Box Club. You can get an exclusive, yes, that's right, exclusive 30% discount code if you click the link in our description. But Box Box Club is also free to download. If you don't want the ultra version, you can just try it out, but I reckon you'll be converted. But download it. The app is free on both App Store and the Google Store, whatever you have to use for Android. I don't have one, so I don't know. And yeah, get involved. It really is a banging app for all F1 fans, so you will not regret it. And then, like I said, if you do want 30% off the Ultra subscription, use our code BOXBOX. Something is in the description. we'll just forget about that bit. Anyway, make sure you also check us out on social media. We are across all platforms, but most notably Instagram and TikTok. And yes, we do post additional content there. So it is worth checking out. We do also clip up the podcast if you just want it on smaller bites. I think that's pretty much all the don't know what the word is, but that's pretty much all I need to get out before we can actually dive into what was a very, very, I found exciting Imola race. I thought it was a really good weekend, actually.
Yeah, and I mean, firstly, have I told you I'm doing a marathon this year?
Oh my God.
Okay, let's move on. Yeah, I actually really enjoyed it, and I was actually pleasantly surprised because I think we've discussed, haven't we? We've had some, you know, when we did. Where are you looking?
There's a hair on your mic.
Oh.
I would have been watching that the whole episode. I wouldn't have been able to think about anything else.
It triggering you?
Yeah, it was like I was just like, fuck, that's got to go. Anyway.
But we discussed last week, didn't we, about the fact that we've had a few good races at Imola over the last few years.
Yeah.
And
Which can I just add, like obviously Imola is a track that is kind of notorious for not being the best for overtaking. Like,
it's
it's a track that everyone loves.
it is. It's historical. There's a lot of. This is one of those tracks that actually qualifying matters more than a race.
And it's a great track to watch cars fly around.
Yeah. And a lot of people were going, you know, it's going to not be very a lot of overtaking. You know, a lot of it is all what you do on a Saturday. And I have to say, I saw a lot of overtaking today. I saw a lot of attacking. I was just really pleasantly surprised and I loved it. And I know there's a lot of talk at the moment that, you know, we may not see Imola next year going forward, you know.
Which can I just say, if Imola is not on the calendar next year or the year after that or the year after that, it is a disgrace. It is an absolute disgrace because, not least, that it is, in my opinion, it provides good races, right?
Yeah.
It might not be, like I say, famous for that or and it's notoriously bad for overtaking, but for me, my memory, I remember some good races at Imola, right? Not least, it's a historic track, right? That is so enjoyable to watch the cars go around, and you know, you've got such unbelievable fans there. You know,
It
you've
was
got
cool this
it,
weekend.
it's it, that is technically the home of Ferrari, right?
Yeah.
As close as we're going to get in F1 because it's closer than Monza. I just think you can't get rid of it. It would be a disgrace.
But I think the FIA need to listen to the drivers because every single driver this weekend said they love this track. It's a proper driver's track. It's not one of these street circuits. It is, you've got gravel either side. It is the skill of the driver, and I know you can say that every week is, but it's all about what the driver does on that day, and the
This is
drivers love it.
it's very much a track where it's like 1 centimeter out and you've either ruined your lap, ruined your race, you're in the gravel trap, you're in the wall. Like, it's such a precious track in that regards that you have to be so precise when you're
And
going around it.
you saw that this weekend, Yuki Tsunoda, and we'll get onto that in a minute. Colapinto, Albon, you know, in the race, I know
Pierre Gasly.
Gasly, yeah. So you know, I think if Imola goes, look, we've always said out of the two Italian tracks, we love Monza more than Imola. However, this weekend was another great advertisement for why Imola should stay on the
it's calendar. A great advertisement for proper race tracks. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, like, they're just better to watch. It was just more enjoyable to watch. And like I say, a big thing for me always is watching the passion of the fans. And when you see and I know there are passionate fans elsewhere where we go, but I'm saying, like, you can't take a track like that away, not least because of the track, but also because of the fans that you have there. They're just quality.
Well, Lewis Hamilton spoke about it after, isn't he? And he said he was quite, like, overwhelmed this weekend. He's obviously seen what the Tifosi is like over the years, but actually driving for Ferrari this year, being his first time experiencing a home track, he was, like, blown away by the support and the atmosphere. And he said it's just great. And it's something you don't get at other tracks, especially street circuits.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, like I say, it has to stay on the calendar.
Yeah.
FIA, we're calling you out. You know who we are. It would be a disgrace.
It was interesting because Ted Kravitz was on, obviously, Ted's notebook afterwards. He said, the FIA have got to listen to the drivers when it comes to this type of decision-making, because you get more out of the drivers when they're enjoying these type of tracks. Same as things like Japan. I know that's not being discussed, but they're the type of tracks that the drivers just love. It's, you know, it's got to stay.
And look, I know the FIA are not there to please fans, but ultimately they have to listen to fans, and I think they should listen to the fans when it comes to this kind of stuff, because, you know, we're the reason they exist.
Yeah.
You know, if we don't turn up, then they've got nothing. So I hope they listen. I hope they keep Imola, and I hope they extend it on the calendar.
Yeah. There's something which I noticed this weekend, and we've mentioned before in the past how mad I just find it mental that you look at qualifying yesterday. Yuki Tsunoda had that awful crash. Colapinto had that awful crash. Mm-hmm. You come into the race today, 63 laps, right? Mm-hmm. There was no crashes. Isn't it mad how these drivers, and I know that's why they're the 20 best drivers in the world, but you can go from one day having a horrific crash, losing it on a curb or whatever, but then do 63 laps non-stop. The mentality, yeah. I just find it mad. And we've said in the past, haven't we, like qualifying laps, you have a really bad first run, for example, but then you can go out there with the pressure on and put a stonker of a lap in.
Yeah, and you have to just be able to switch off. Mm. You know, Yuki Tsunoda must have been shitting himself coming up to that part of the track, because that was a really awful crash, by the way, and I know we'll get onto it. But again, thank God for the halo. How many lives has that saved in the last 5 years? I mean, Guan Yu Zhou, Yuki Tsunoda, Lewis Hamilton, Romain Grosjean.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is just in the last 5 years. I'm sure there's probably more that I'm forgetting about. And it is just unbelievable, the safety of these cars now, because he just jumped out like nothing had happened. And I know his body would have been pumping with adrenaline, but, mate, I mean, you would have been sitting there like thinking, God, neck's a bit sore. Or
probably going to have a couple of weeks off work now.
Like, I think if you had a crash like that in a normal car, I mean, firstly, you might be dead. But let's assume you've evaded death, right? You're at least taking a couple of days off work.
We were in hospital for a few days having tests. Then actually, look, the trauma of it, you need some time off.
Yeah.
You know, because that was a horrific crash.
I didn't realise how bad it was until, like, saw the replay, obviously, and it was...
Because I saw him, I go, oh, God, this is awful. And then I was expecting that he just, like, span off and went into the wall.
Because that's the thing, the car didn't even look... We've seen cars look worse from less impactful crashes, I think.
I mean, it looked bad, but...
It did look bad, but, like, when I saw it from that first shot, you know, it was that kind of front-on shot, I was like, oh, what's he done here? Like, must have just lost it and just, like, smashed the wall. But no, he flew into the wall upside down, basically.
It'll buff out.
Yeah, like, you know, it'll buff
out. Right, let's get into the weekend. We'll go through each team. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's start at the team that had the worst weekend. I'm going to call them the yo-yo team this season because I don't know where they are from one weekend to the next.
Can I guess who you're going to say?
Well, I think it's pretty easy.
Haas.
Awful
weekend for them.
When I saw that, the end of the race, and you look at the classification, just see, okay, where did everyone finish? And it was like, yeah, that's a bad weekend for Haas. And it was just last week we were saying, oh, Ayu Komatsu in our top three F1 team principals, he's not in there, but he does deserve a mention. And I stand by that. But they are very inconsistent.
It's very track specific where they do well.
Yeah, it's...
And it's very evident that is the case, and that's probably going to be the case for the year.
It's really interesting to see, because for me it makes them so unpredictable. And look, they're never going to be... they're never going to be like up there, but you do think that there is opportunities for them throughout the year to grab some more points, but I couldn't tell you where it's going to be.
No,
because the car is just so unpredictable.
It's interesting. So Ocon qualified P18, Oli Bearman P19. There's a lot of confusion because, I mean, look, we give the stewards a bit of a hard time at times because of their decision making. It took them forever yesterday to make a decision of whether it's going to be Bortoleto going through to Q2 or Oli Bearman. Oli Bearman, obviously the red flag came out before he finished his lap. And
I mean, they were lucky there was a red flag. Like, imagine if, I don't know, it was a yellow and he had gone through or something and they had to make this decision.
He would have gone through,
Bortoleto would have missed out on the opportunity. And then he would have eventually just been demoted or disqualified.
My worry is, if it was a yellow flag they were making a decision now, they would still be doing it. Yeah. We'd have no race. They would still be going with that. But yeah, the decision-making was just long. So obviously, Oli Bearman went out in P19. The race, again, it was just awful for them.
What did you think on that decision? Did you think it was harsh? Or
I can understand if Oli Bearman had like another corner to go or whatever. But he was already on that main straight.
He was basically crossing the line as it came up.
There was no one in front of him. The crash wasn't in front of him.
And it's tricky, isn't it? Because the argument here, I know what you guys on TikTok are going to say, is like, well, it's the rules. Like, if you do it, if you make an exception there, then you have to make an exception everywhere. And I completely get that point. That is a very, very valid argument. But I think there is a lot to be said for someone that is literally just about to cross the finish line. And the crash isn't there. It's kind of like,
does it
matter? But I know it does.
It does. Personally, I think the rules are the rules. It was a red flag. The red flag went before you finish a lap. And actually, that's what it should be for across the board. Whether you've got one turn to go, whether you're on the main straight, whatever. For me, that was an easy decision. You could see that he hadn't crossed the line when the red flag came on. That's it, done.
Yeah.
But they delayed.
They're long, aren't they?
They delayed. They took it like another 20, 25 minutes.
They're just slow.
It was poor. But obviously...
They were slow with a safety car in the race, so... when Kimi pulled up on the side.
But also, can I ask, what was the difference from Ocon pulling up to Kimi pulling up? One's a virtual safety car, one's a full safety car. What is the difference?
It didn't make any sense. The only thing I can think of is there was like a little... escape bit where they could pull the car out, but you still
they're pretty much in the same places.
You would have had to have had people out there.
I was with you,
I thought the first one was going to be a full safety and then the second one I thought was going to be a full safety and it was, but so slow. The yellows came out and it must have been like 15, 20 seconds, but all the cars had gone past the pits.
Well, the Ferrari team actually came out into the pit lane and there was still no safety car.
Because anyone with a brain cell could have looked at that and been like, that's a safety car. Let's pull it out, lads.
Yeah. Because I know Corey put in the chat, what's the difference between these two? And I couldn't tell you what the difference was because they're pretty identical places where they stopped. So, yeah, look, awful day for Ocon. He retired. Oli Bearman... he pitted and then had an issue where he thought that his tyre was loose and then came back in without telling the team he was coming in. It was just an awful day for Haas all around. And
a bad day at the office. And Haas are going to have bad days. They're also going to have good days.
Yeah.
Still stand by it. Ayu Komatsu has done a great job there.
Yeah, very much so. Sauber? Because, you know, all the bigger teams we got coming up, so do stay tuned for this. But Sauber, Hülkenberg qualified P17, Bortoleto got into Q2, P14. And, you know, Bortoleto all weekend, and this is a... Yeah, okay, he finished last today, but... No. he finished last today, but again, like we've said each week, and we can just put this on repeat each week, another solid weekend, a one without crashes this weekend, more experience under his belt.
Yeah.
Because when you look at certain rookies, they are crashing, and I know he has done in the past, but...
I think this is all you can ask from Bortoleto at this point. We've said Sauber, at this point in time, is the worst team to be at, right? Mm. Out of all the rookies, he's pulled the shortest straw,
yeah.
Okay? He's had to come into a team that is working on another project, right? Which is completely fine and valid, like the circumstances, it all makes sense, but his job is to literally get the car across the line every single race.
Minimal damage.
Minimal cost. Damage. Doesn't want to cost them anything. He just wants to get experience. Mm. He wants to just work on learning how to drive an F1 car properly. And I think you can't complain about Bortoleto. I think the one thing I would probably note, and I know Hülkenberg is a very good driver, right? Mm. We've said this. He really deserves a shot at a top team to be at least a number two because I feel like he's earned that. The disparity is a bit big for my liking between the two of them in race. Yeah. Race pace, Hulk is he's always in a position that I feel is better than that car.
Well, you saw him today overtaking Alonso. I know he finished P12, but at one point he was in the points.
P12 is good for that car.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And I know it's not what they need. Is you know they want points, but...
But you say that, but he's ahead of the other RB where Hadjar picked up points. He's ahead of them.
Hadjar had a great race.
He's ahead of, you know, one of the Aston Martins.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, that's all I would be just keeping my eye on. If I was Mattia Binotto, which luckily I am not, I would just...
Unless you're getting paid, then...
Yeah, I would like his salary. I would just be mindful that there is a bit of a gap, and I don't think that's massively abnormal because Bortoleto is a rookie, but I would personally like to see them a little bit closer.
Yeah, Bortoleto over one lap seems to have good pace.
Yeah.
Over a race distance, there is a disparity, yeah. And that's where we need to see him come a bit closer. So yeah, I agree. But Hülkenberg today, pretty solid, coming away with P12. They'll be relatively happy with that. Let's go to Alpine. What are you after? Your phone?
It's right here.
Let's get into Alpine. So, heading into this weekend, Franco Colapinto's first race weekend for Alpine. We said last week, all he had to do was come in, not crash, not finish too far behind Pierre Gasly, and get into Q2. Well, let's break those down, okay? So, he did get into Q2.
He did.
But simply because he pulled a red flag.
Yep.
So that was
like... It was on a technicality.
Yep. The crash in qualifying. Look, there's still a lot of people out there at the moment who are sceptical over whether Franco Colapinto was the right choice. He did crash a lot in Williams. He did.
Which we, you know, I got reprimanded about my maths. Because it wasn't 50% of the races. It was about 44.84%.
You know, so this was a very, very tough weekend. He obviously got a one-place grid penalty as well for the coming into the pit lane before they were allowed. So all round, it was a very difficult weekend for Franco Colapinto. And, you know, there's been a lot of question was, actually, he didn't do any better than Jack Doohan. And I understand where people are coming from with that. However, this is his first race with Alpine, so I think we need to give him a bit of slack. However...
That is a fair point, though.
It is.
But I also agree, he deserves a little bit of slack. Like, come on, guys, he's young, rookie-ish, coming into a new team. Mm. To judge him off one race would be Mental.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at the race, obviously, Gasly finished P13, Colapinto P16. I know we had the safety car, but he finished a couple of seconds behind. Look, it's one of those weekends for Colapinto that actually he'll want to forget. He's gelled with the team. He's got his first race week under the belt. Seeing what he can do in Monaco, again, Monaco's a very tough track. And it's going to be very interesting. I mean, he hasn't come into the easy ones.
I think we're going to see a few crashes at Monaco. There's, but the thing is, it's not just the rookies that are crashing, you know, but, you know, we've got a lot of rookies and I'm excited to talk about Monaco at the end. But I do think Colapinto will be glad to have got his first race under the belt. It is a tricky track to come into. Do you know, like you just made the point, he's not got the easiest run of tracks to sort of... That calendar looks wrong. Oh, no, it is right. It's not the easiest to come into, basically. And I still believe he'll do a good job.
The difficulty is with Franco is he does have that crash in him. And I'm not trying to take anything away from him. He's a very fast driver. He's a very talented driver. But the one thing that he didn't want to do this weekend was crash. Because there was a lot of... Jack Doohan, obviously, still there. Did you see... I don't know if you saw that shot afterwards of Jack Doohan in the paddock walking down smirking.
No.
And they went, oh, look, this is obviously... This must be from earlier, this shot. It was literally like 10 minutes after the crash happened.
Oh. So, yeah, but you know, like this is
taken out of context.
Someone had probably just told him a joke or something, yeah. And he was just.
Well, like, have you seen Franco crash?
Yeah,
seen that.
Yeah, no, but he's allowed to be happy. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He's allowed to smile at things just because Franco Colapinto has crashed. But whether it's the right decision or not is way too early to tell. I stand by the fact that I think it is the right decision. I stand by the fact that I've openly said I think he crashes a little bit too much to be. You know, Franco Colapinto was put on a pedestal, right? And he was sort of portrayed to us as if he was the next big thing. And he absolutely might be at some point. But I didn't get that from watching him at Williams. What I saw was a very good, raw, young driver. Now, he should get the whole season at Alpine. If I'm going to start boarding that train, and I love Colapinto, by the way. Like, I love his personality. I love that he's got a massive Argentinian following. And I think he's just generally like a cool guy, right? I want to see him do really well. And I want to get on that hype train with Colapinto. So I want to see some good performances from him. And I'm not going to judge him off the first race. You know, if we did that, Isaac Hadjar would be way down in our... You know, he's doing great. And it's silly to judge people. And like I say, it's a tough one to come into. Crashing was not ideal. Because that's also going to knock his confidence. But I think he did fine.
He finished the race, which is good. He's got that experience behind him now. The one thing I have to say about Alpine, I feel like they've brought all of this pressure on themselves. Because we've said before, haven't we? You know, you brought in Jack Doohan, okay? Giving him a seat, perfect. He's got his opportunity. You then bring in Colapinto. So everyone thinks, okay, it's not going to last long for Jack Doohan. So he's got that pressure. He's got that constant pressure, race after race, knowing he's got Colapinto in behind him. He then gets replaced by Colapinto. So then Colapinto's got this pressure. But behind, he's still got Jack Doohan as your reserve driver. But there's also that you've got Paul Aaron there. So not that I'm expecting him to do that. But you're then getting rid of Ollie Oakes. You've got all of this turmoil within this team.
But you know The rumours. It was literally Flavio Briatore that said this about Colapinto having 5 races. And then this weekend, Briatore was like, oh, I don't know where that rumour came from. That's just not true. It was you that said it. It's not a rumour. It literally came out of your mouth.
Yeah.
If that is true, which it sounds like it isn't, got denied by the person who confirmed it, which is interesting. It would be silly because why are you putting so much pressure on these drivers? You just need them to succeed. You've got to support them. Jack Doohan, rookie. Franco Colapinto, basically a rookie. The last thing they need is, mate, you've got about 2 races before you've got a target on your back. So hurry up. That's not what they need.
What's your benchmark? Oh, we want you to get a podium in Monaco. Well, how am I going to do that?
Yeah, like, and this piece of shit, which Alpine, extremely good over one lap.
Yeah, Pierre Gasly, qualified P10. I mean, look, he had that battle with Charles Leclerc. His race kind of got ruined from there. He ended up finishing P13. Look, Alpine weren't really anywhere this weekend. It was, I mean, they had a good qualifying, but apart from that, they weren't really. It's quite a disappointing weekend for them.
Yeah, it's, look, Alpine are another one of those teams where they've got a new power unit next year.
But I think it'd be very track specific for Alpine again this year.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. They were talking about it, weren't they? The Alpine's power unit, you know, the Renault engine, is just not very good. Mm. So if you see them around one lap on a track like Imola, and they were doing well, if they had some straight line speed behind them, all of a sudden it could be a different story. So I do think Alpine are sort of... I think next year will be important for them. Move into the Mercedes engine.
Yeah.
They do need to nail it, because it's getting to a point where, you know, at one point they were in the battle with McLaren.
Mm.
And obviously this is because McLaren were further back. It wasn't Alpine up there, but Alpine can make the same jump as McLaren. McLaren are no different to them.
They need stability.
They do. They need stability.
To actually, what Alpine need is they need to build on that foundation they've got. They've got two very good drivers, Colapinto, Pierre Gasly, okay? They need that stability now. They've got Briatore at the helm. What are you going to do? Move forward together, build that team. You've got a good team. You know you can actually get... You saw that last year in Brazil. You can get podiums. Yeah. You can get good points. They need to calm it down a bit and kind of just focus on racing rather than the whole...
They need to step away from the controversy. They need to just... You want them to fly under the radar. Mm. For me, Alpine are a team that, given where they are in the standings, shouldn't really be talked about a lot. But
yeah,
people are talking about them a lot. And I don't think that helps, because it's not for the right reasons. So yeah, they just need to get their heads down now, settle, focus, and look, they're not going to have a great season. That's fine. Yeah. They know that. But what they do need to do is start just building out the team so they're perfectly positioned to head into the new regs next year.
100%. Do let us know on Alpine. So let's get into Aston Martin. Well, what a difference a day can make. So qualifying, Fernando Alonso P5, Lance Stroll P8. They went for a completely different strategy than by putting on the mediums, which was interestingly because they were last year's softs.
Yeah.
So obviously the new C6, which is a lot softer, they decided to go on the mediums. Somehow,
it worked.
Masterclass.
Yeah.
So then you thought to yourself, okay, Aston Martin, have they turned this around? And it was really funny. So before the race, they were going, you know, has Adrian Newey started to have some effect on this car? And we know that he's working on next year's car, but has he had some like input? And then all of a sudden, they were like, they finished P11 and P15, and Adrian Newey is probably sitting there going, I don't want my name anywhere
near
that.
Nothing to do with me. But it did get me thinking on that point, right? I don't know. I've never sat here and claimed to be like an F1 expert, right? I'm just a fan. So entertain me here, right? Or educate me. Could they be testing parts for next year in some capacity on this era of car? Could they be trying things out? Because obviously Aston Martin brought a big upgrade package this week. And obviously initially, it sort of... Everyone was kind of thinking, oh my god, have they done it again? Mm. You know, because that was a big jump initially. I was like, holy shit, they're up there. And that's on mediums. Mm. You know, okay, it didn't translate into the race. But the race was really hard to follow because of everything that happened. There was different strategies.
But I think their race pace was well off today.
Yeah.
I think that was a true representation of where they actually are.
But do you think they could be just trialing parts? But I'm not sure if it's possible.
I don't know. I don't... Well,
there could be, it might not be parts for next year, but it could be concepts for next year.
Yeah, I think it'd be too early to do that. I think these upgrades are generally for now. Mm. That's what they brought them for. I understand where you're coming from, but I think this weekend was generally the fact they brought upgrades. They actually had a very good strategy on Saturday by switching from softs to mediums. But actually, today, they were just back to old Aston Martin. And I did feel sorry for Alonso because he was close to picking up his first points of the season. But yeah, it was just a difficult day for Aston Martin.
Yeah.
Yeah, as I said, Alonso P11, Stroll 15th.
It will be interesting to see how they perform next week.
Yeah, I mean, these upgrades may be, again, very track specific, but what is showed this weekend is actually over a lap, they look relatively quick.
And that's very important at Monaco.
Very important. But then, you know, the race day is a big thing. So,
Come on, we've seen Danny Ric.
I mean, in Monaco, I'm talking. Yeah. Yes, I get your point, Monaco.
In Monaco.
But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they get on. But yeah, I generally thought for a moment Aston Martin were like back. Not to be. Where should we go? RB,
let's do it.
So, let's just say, you know, Isaac Hadjar, P9, Liam Lawson, P16. Isaac Hadjar has Liam Lawson in his back pocket.
Yeah, it's it must be difficult for Liam, and I don't normally sit here and like cut people slack because it's just not the type of fan that I am. But I do for Liam Lawson because I still feel bad for him. This must be just such a tricky time. Mm. You get given the Red Bull seat, two races chopped because you finished dead last in both races in a Red Bull while Max Verstappen won a race. And do you know what I mean? Been in the mix. You then get swapped out for someone else. You come into the team and now you're being beaten by the rookie. And I know what you're going to say. Liam Lawson is a rookie. No, he's not. I don't care. And I'm not having this argument again. But he's not a rookie. And he should be. He should be the one that is...
He looks like the rookie.
He does, but he should be the one that looks like the experienced driver or the more experienced driver. And I'm going to say it, Isaac Hadjar, rookie of the year for me so far.
He's been phenomenal. He's been so consistent. And as we said before, that Australia race where he didn't even start could have completely broken him.
Yeah.
And we've seen drivers have that and they don't recover from it. He has just got stronger and stronger. Another two points today, finishing P9. Look, for a long period of time, he was P4.
He was well up there.
Yeah, on those mediums. So, look, he did a phenomenal job today. And I think when you look at the contrast between Hadjar and Lawson, they're not even close. Not even close.
Well, I mean, obviously, Hadjar made it into Q3.
Yeah.
So, Lawson was out in Q1. It's just crazy. I just didn't expect it. And I think, are Red Bull going to start thinking, hang on here, come the end of the season, because we'll get on to Red Bull and Yuki. Is Isaac Hadjar a serious option?
My only worry is with that.
I don't want it to happen.
No, I want him
to be protected at all costs.
Yeah. And it's very similar to how we were of Yuki. I wanted Yuki to stay at RB because I was always worried about his Red Bull seat. And I think Isaac is doing everything he needs to do at the moment to prove himself, and he's proven himself very well. He is pretty much on similar pace as what Yuki was doing, I would say.
Yeah.
And I think if Yuki was still in that RB seat, they would both be in points today. Because I think Yuki was very at one with that RB seat. Mm-hmm. Isaac Hadjar as well. I just personally think going to that second Red Bull seat is cursed.
Yeah, it's not looking good. We will talk about Red Bull, but I mean, I think if Liam Lawson carries on this way, I don't think he's going to have a seat next season.
Which is what I've said. Mm. I've said I'm not confident. You know, we're only race 7. Okay, so we had the first two races with Red Bull. They were shocking. The last five, and some people will say, yeah, but you know, he's done all right. He's done all right. He's finished races, all of this stuff. He's been nowhere near Isaac Hadjar. Nowhere near. And to prove yourself, you need to be beating the rookie on that team.
And people might say, oh, this is double standards because of what you said about Bortoleto and Hülkenberg, but Hülkenberg's a very experienced F1 driver that is very quick. And
Hülkenberg is beating Bortoleto.
Yeah. So that's my point. Like, you know, we were saying, oh, Bortoleto, you can cut him to slack because of this. And you know, they're also in a rubbish car. Like, this RB has been proven to be able to pick up points. Mm. And Isaac Hadjar is a rookie. He's not driven an F1 car before this season, you know, consistently. So Liam Lawson should be... He shouldn't be beating him every race. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying it needs to be a lot closer between them.
You know, you can kind of understand if you get out qualify one time, then you beat them in the race and vice versa. But Isaac Hadjar is just out qualifying Liam Lawson. He's outperforming him in the race week in, week out, pretty much. It doesn't look good for Liam Lawson at this moment in time.
It doesn't.
Where should we go next? Mercedes?
Yeah, rough weekend for them.
Rough weekend. Antonelli's home race. Qualified P13. George Russell, however, qualifying P3. Again,
missed on P3.
On those mediums. Mm. Very impressive from George. And I did generally think that they had, from what I saw, I was thinking, okay, they've got quite good pace this weekend. It didn't transpire. And I know there's a lot of factors into that, you know, the virtual safety car, the changes, all that.
Obviously, I got really confused.
It doesn't surprise me.
How did George Russell drop so far down when he came out behind Charles Leclerc?
Yeah, but this is where I put in the chat. The undercut was really strong. But for some reason, Charles Leclerc, they pitted. I know they pitted. He was one of the first ones to pit onto hards. It worked a treat. Mm. But for some reason, people like Oscar, people like George, when they pitted early, they got stuck in so much traffic. Yeah. It was mad.
It shafted them.
It did. And we'll get on to, you know, Oscar in a second, because I do think McLaren did screw Oscar's...
I agree.
But we'll get on to that in a second. But yeah, Russell, I just don't think they generally had the pace on a whole. I know George was really frustrated with Oscar into turn one, because that whole first turn, and we'll get on to Max in a bit, but I thought George was going to overtake Max.
Yeah.
And I thought, what an overtake. And all of a sudden, we'll get on to Max's overtake. But that was mental.
Crazy.
It was mental.
But I didn't... What did you think about George complaining about? I didn't know what Oscar did. What did he do?
I think what George was saying is because he got... George had a better start.
Yeah.
But I think because Oscar...
So what's Oscar meant to do? Pull over and let him through? Yeah. Like,
I thought he was just moaning about it, but...
I didn't really get it. What was he... Was he upset that he didn't overtake him?
I think because he felt like Oscar was slow. He broke way too early into turn one, which meant that
he did break a little early.
Yeah. But I think because...
He needed to go full send into that.
He did, yeah. But I think because they were quite compact, that's why George was so close, and that's why he lost that position to over... Not position, but he lost that option to overtake.
Yeah, and that's...
It's racing.
What would George Russell have done?
Russell those feathers. Yeah. That came up the other day on a...
Numbers.
It did, yeah. I liked it. But yeah, Russell ended up finishing P7. Kimi Antonelli in his home race, DNF'd. It was weird, wasn't it? It looked like he just went over that curb... And then it just went.
The car just gave up.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. But yeah, disappointing day for them. But disappointing in general for Mercedes. I expected a bit more from them this weekend.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, I mean, I think you kind of, in qualifying, you kind of, I mean, not from Kimi, but, I mean, George got P3 again. Mm. So I was like, oh, he's going to pick up another P3 in the race, isn't he? But yeah, like you say, it just didn't translate into the race and ended up being a bad weekend for them. Yeah. But Mercedes have been pretty decent. They've been consistent.
Yeah, I agree. Ferrari. Okay, if you asked us yesterday, we were in quite a bad mood, you and I, weren't we, with regards to... So
look, this is what I'm going to say, right? Ignore the race result. Ferrari, it is unacceptable. It is unacceptable that, number one, you are Ferrari and... You have produced a car like this. You've gone backwards from last year. Number two, you have a 7-time world champion, Lewis Hamilton, and an unbelievable driver in Charles Leclerc. And this is the car you give them. It's unforgivable.
Yeah.
I don't understand how for so many years they keep getting it so wrong.
Well, it was interesting, wasn't it? Because both went out in Q2. Leclerc, P11. Hamilton P12. What was interesting for me with that was we've seen over the last few races that, you know, Leclerc might qualify P4, Lewis mm-hmm. Hamilton qualifies P8, so there's a bit of a gap. The reassuring thing for me this weekend was actually they were both struggling with the car, but they were both relatively consistent. Because
much closer.
Yeah, I mean, it was like 1/10 difference between Leclerc and Hamilton. And that was reassuring that actually it isn't just Lewis struggling, if that makes sense. So that was something I took from yesterday. But coming to the race today, like, I was not expecting much.
No, I was expecting nothing.
Lewis Hamilton, I saw glimpses today of just... He took a while to get past Kimi Antonelli. Granted, but Kimi did a great job.
Not easy. And they did say you need like 7/10 delta in order to
overtake.
And to do that to a Mercedes, which is quicker than the Ferrari, not easy. No. And he did get it done eventually.
Yeah, I mean, the strategy worked well initially for Leclerc. They pitted him early. He was on the mediums, went on to hards. I think it was like lap 12, 13. Leclerc was going through the pack. He was looking very strong. He jumped George in the pits as well. And even the Williams, Carlos Sainz as well. And you thought to yourself, okay, that's quite a good strategy. Then I got a bit worried because I was like, well, okay, people like Oscar and that all catching, you know, Lewis. Lewis was on the hards. I was thinking, this is going to be one of those races where Lewis ends up just finishing like P9 or P10 or something. However, the virtual safety car came out. That played into the hands. They pitted Lewis. He went on to the mediums. And they just look strong. Lewis just looked in the zone today. And he looked solid. So great battle from Leclerc and Albon.
Mm-hmm.
What was your thoughts on that? I actually felt like... I can understand why I felt like Ferrari made the right decision in saying to Leclerc, look, there's a potential we might get a 5-second penalty, which means that potentially we might lose three places instead of just one. It makes more sense just to say, give up that place, and then we just lose one place rather than three or four. I liked that today. I actually felt like they were quite decisive in their decision making.
At least they made a call.
Yeah.
But I don't really see what Charles did wrong.
No, I agree with you.
And he was obviously angry over the radio. And I kind of get it. It was his corner. At no point was Albon ahead of him. What is Charles supposed to do?
Yeah.
Just open the door and let him through? Like, he didn't do anything unfair.
No, but that's the issue, isn't it? Penalties are being given so easily now for instance like that. Actually,
you have to be able to let people race, and when people race, sometimes someone's going to end up in the gravel, or, you know, cutting the grass, and, you know, unfortunately sometimes in the wall, or that is racing. And I feel like Charles is, obviously he didn't get a penalty because he gave the place back, but I felt like it does take away a little bit from the spirit of racing, because you're supposed to find a gap. You're not supposed to have rules that mandate someone to open a gap for you. And that, I know that you have to race fair, right? So if Albon was, like I said, maybe he had overtaken him into the corner or moved ahead even slightly, then Charles has to leave room. But I don't see anything wrong with what he did. I don't know why he would have given the position back.
Yeah. I think they were just covering just in case, which I get.
I get it on Ferrari's part, and it makes sense because it was like, look, we don't know what they're going to do because no one knows what the FIA are going to do or the race directors, whatever. So just give it back, because if you don't and you do get a 5-second penalty, well, chances are you're going to end up 7th or whatever.
And I think, you know, in all the flaws of Ferrari, I have to say, fair play, their pit stops are looking decent.
Yeah, we had a 2.1 today.
They look good, which is very bizarre to say for a Ferrari team. But I think, you know, what we saw today, we saw glimpses. And I know afterwards there was a discussion of kind of, does this mean that Ferrari on the right track? I'm not getting my hopes up with this because
they're not.
Go back to China when we won the sprint race, we're kind of like, wow, okay, we're actually all right here. And then all of a sudden it just went downhill from there. I know Leclerc's picked up a podium and that, but it is promising. 18 points for Ferrari today. Hamilton, his highest finish in Ferrari. He looked quick.
In a race, sorry.
He looked very much in the zone today, and he looked like he was enjoying himself. Some great overtakes.
Yeah, no, it was a really good weekend for Lewis, and he obviously came out before and said, you know, I have to remind myself, I'm a 7-time world champion. You know, judge me at the end of my career at Ferrari. Not now. And it was a really good point, and it got me thinking, sort of reflecting how, you know, we've spoken about him. And I think we've been fair. I think also as fans, you're allowed to say, I'm expecting more, right? Yeah. And we were expecting a little bit more, but we said we were expecting more from Ferrari to start with, and then a little bit more from Lewis. But it did make me think, like, yeah, fair play. I will judge it afterwards, but look, I'm a Lewis fan. He can't really do much wrong in my eyes, but I do try and be unbiased when we're speaking on this podcast, because I know it pisses people off if we're just like so centered around one person and you can't see the good or the bad. So I feel like we do try and give a good impartial view of Lewis, which is why it just got me thinking, like, yeah, this is a project, right? It sounds crazy because Ferrari should not be a project. No. It should be a team that you go to win. But it is a project, and I think part of why they've brought Lewis on board is to get them back to the top. So let's see how Lewis does when he leaves Ferrari, because part of me still wants to believe that there's an 8th world championship in this story that's going to be written. And if anyone can do it, it's Lewis, and we'll be here for it.
And I think today he showed he can still go head-to-head. And, you know, picking up that P4, you saw what that meant to him. And it's weird, isn't it, getting excited over a P4 when we're so used to Lewis picking up the P1s, you know, podiums and all of this. So it was a positive day, but we need to see more consistent of that.
You know, if he was getting P4s most weekends and stuff, you know, if he was doing what George was doing, you'd be like, this is good. But like I say, I do think that this is mainly a Ferrari problem, because Charles is having the same issues. And Charles is a great driver as well.
Yeah, no, exactly. Do let us know what your thoughts are on Ferrari. Williams, Alex Albon.
What a weekend, man.
Carlos Sainz qualifying P6, Alex Albon P7. Race-wise, Alex Albon P5, Carlos Sainz P8. You know, another 14 points for Williams this weekend. They look good. Alex Albon is... Look, we've said before that actually, I don't know, he hasn't had a competitive teammate since he's been at Williams. He's now got Carlos Sainz in, and now we're starting to see him step it up. Because today, he went head-to-head with Charles Leclerc. He was going for it. And in theory, if he hadn't gone off with Charles Leclerc, he was on course to try and challenge Piastri towards the end. Yeah. Piastri with his worn out tyres. Alex Albon on those hard.
Lewis made some dents on Piastri.
He did. And there was talk that actually, you know, potentially if Albon hadn't had that battle with Charles and everything, he could have potentially, and he, you know, he got past Charles, he could have potentially been chasing down. And even Oscar in the cool down room said he would have been under pressure from Albon.
Which is crazy, isn't it? Mad. I mean, James vows, I can't clap because I'm holding a microphone, but I'm giving you a round of applause, because that team is, you know, Williams were, for too long, for a team of that stature, were at the bottom of F1, right? They, for new fans that were coming, I think they thought Williams were just one of the shit teams.
Yeah.
And Williams are not. Williams are one of the greatest teams in the sport's history. And do you know how nice it is to see them back in these positions? And they still got a way to go.
Yeah.
But just honestly, like 2 years ago, Williams were horrendous.
You had Logan Sargeant.
Man, it was...
It was, you know, it's so refreshing to see. And I like Williams. And I've said before, likelihood is after Lewis retires, I probably will become like a Williams fan. I like Carlos Sainz. I probably follow Carlos if he's still there. And we've always admired James Vowles. It was always a big move for him to go. And a lot of emphasis was on 2026. However, you know, what he's doing already, seven races in to this season, is phenomenal. And that Williams team is a real competitive team. And actually, they're on course to even be ahead of Ferrari at this moment in time.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, a lot this weekend, they looked ahead of Ferrari.
It's great. It's honestly great to see. And it's weird. One of my friends is a Williams fan, and he messaged me now. I'm starting to get more and more messages from him. Over the last few years, I don't hear from him at all because it's because, you know,
they stay quiet.
Difficult for them. But now, like yesterday, he was messaging me going, like, honestly, watching a Williams get into even Q3 or even chat is just phenomenal. And that's down to they got a very solid driver lineup.
Yeah.
They've got a fantastic, you know, team principal in James Fowles. The team are behind him. He's got them all working in unity, and it is phenomenal. It really is phenomenal.
Yeah. You love to see it, and I really hope this 2026 plan of theirs comes to fruition. And I want to see them right up at the front with all the other boys.
If they have a strong year this year, heading into 2026 puts them in a very good stead.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's, you know, 2026 is a clean slate, but it is building off, you know, these cars now.
Yeah.
And it gives you great confidence going into that year that they're going to do something special.
Ah, it's brilliant. Love to see it. Right, two teams left. McLaren and Red Bull, which one do you want to go to?
Let's go to Red Bull because I just want to talk about Max Verstappen's overtake into turn one. Man, that was so good.
It came out of nowhere.
It's a move that at this point in time only Max Verstappen can pull off.
I would say that's one of the best overtakes into that turn one I've ever seen.
How late was he on the brakes?
I
could not believe it. I literally watched it in... And this might sound ridiculous to people because I'm not saying it's one of the best overtakes that's ever happened, but it was just the way he did it into that turn one, round the outside, up against Oscar Piastri, leading the world championship in the quickest car on the grid. It was just watching it like, that was all about the driver. And that was a Max Verstappen overtake. And it was just perfect. I hated it every single second of it.
Isn't it mad though? Because I looked at it and I was like, and I said earlier on, didn't I? It looked like George was going to overtake Max.
Yeah.
Oscar had a very good start. It looked like George was up next to Max. I was like, okay, Max is dropping down here.
I do think Oscar bitched it a little bit.
Oscar even came out afterwards and said that he braked too early into that corner. And the thing is with Max Verstappen, you give him any sniff of like a gap, he will take it.
Give him an inch, he'll take a mile.
Yeah, but it was phenomenal overtake. And
it was, yeah. I mean, Oscar should have done better, in my opinion. But
to be honest, I don't think it would have made much of a difference. I think that Red Bull was on a different level today. Really? I would say, yeah. Max pulled off very, very comfortably. Very comfortably.
But I think if Oscar had the clean air, I feel like it would have been the same sort of thing.
On this occasion, I don't think it would, because I think...
Also, I don't think it was the Red Bull on a different level. I think it was Max.
Okay, yeah. That car... what Max did today was just Max. And I think when you even saw that after the safety car, Max just went off with it. He was comfortable. And I know you could say Oscar was on the older tyres like that, but Max had that under control throughout the whole race. He never looked flustered. He never looked bothered. And I truly believe that Red Bull today was class above of Max Verstappen and Red Bull.
It was Max in that car that made it special. And
but he just controlled that lovely, you know, and it was, as he says, simply lovely. He rose out very well. So Yuki Tsunoda, especially after the difficult crash yesterday in qualifying, to then come back, starting from the pit lane, pick up a P10, pick up a point, is a positive weekend for Yuki, especially when... It's a positive weekend in the sense of... A positive race day in the sense of it's not normally much overtaken. That's what a lot of people were saying.
Gained a lot of places, but he said himself that crash was an unacceptable crash.
But we said in the chat, didn't we? That car didn't look right going into that corner anyway. Porpoising on that was just mad.
To me, it didn't really look like he did too much wrong, in fairness, but he came out and condemned himself for it. And Yuki needs to, if he wants that seat next year, he really needs to start up in his game, you know, desperately. And I want him to. I love Yuki there.
I hate the fact that he went there. I really do hate the fact Yuki went to Red Bull, because I knew this was what was going to happen.
Yuki Tsunoda would have more points if he had stayed at RB.
100%. 100%. And I think Yuki's a very talented driver. We've seen that. This Red Bull car, unless you're Max Verstappen, is just...
Yeah, but I'm sorry, that just doesn't wash in F1.
No, I agree with
you. I know what you're saying, but you just... You can't get away with that.
No.
You can't have one driver winning races, getting pole positions, and you're crashing and getting P10 and then having people say, oh, it was a positive weekend.
Well, I know. I'm not saying it's a positive weekend. It's P10. No, I know.
He needs to be up there. He should have been in the fight. He should have been up there with Max Verstappen. That's where they need to be.
I agree with you. When I say positive, what I mean is starting from the pit lane. He should never have been in the pit lane in the first place.
It ended better than it started.
Yeah.
But not good enough. And come on, Yuki, I'm backing you.
Yeah.
I need to see more from you.
When do Red Bull get to a point where they go, okay,
should we just put one car in?
let's just
fuck the other car off. We literally save 50%. We use that for a big party at the end when Max Verstappen inevitably wins the world championship.
We can spend more on catering.
Exactly, because they need that budget.
Yeah.
That is a good idea. Look, I'll come in. We'll cut all the costs straight down the middle. You're still going to end up with the same amount of points, because Max Verstappen is the only driver that seems to score points for that team of any significance anyway. Just do it.
When do Red Bull get to a point where they go, okay, there is a serious, serious issue? And because, look, Yuki, we know, is a very good driver. He's gone in there and it's been a struggle, okay? Yuki struggle, Lawson struggle, Perez struggle. Danny Rick struggled when he was there. We've seen...
It's time that maybe we start saying, are Red Bull not getting... You know, Yuki Tsunoda is a good driver. Is he a top team driver? I don't know. For me, it's still too early to say. And I want to say he's good enough to be in a Red Bull. But it's going to get to a point where we say, if they put Carlos Sainz in that Red Bull, do you think he'd be where Yuki is? Because I don't.
But that's interesting, because I would say Carlos Sainz has underperformed what I expected in the Williams. So actually, if I put him in that second seat in Red Bull, would we see the same? I'm not saying Carlos Sainz has been awful. I understand he's gone into a new team. But we all expected that actually Carlos Sainz would be edging Albon when he went into Williams, which hasn't quite happened. So if Carlos Sainz went into the Red Bull, would he have as much success as what like Yuki or Perez did? I don't know.
I agree with the Carlos thing, but I think he is really coming through at Williams now.
I think you're
seeing that. Like, he took a few races to settle, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not judging Yuki now, but I think Carlos Sainz would be doing a better job than Yuki, but I want Yuki to turn it around, and I'm supporting him. It's just a conversation that I think, you know, there's going to come a point where Red Bull needs to say, actually, we just need another top driver in this second seat, because, you know, it's very likely that they're going to lose out on even second place in the constructors to Mercedes.
Well, it's interesting.
And if Ferrari makes some developments, you know, Max cannot constantly compensate because he's not going to win every single race.
So Christian Horner was asked about whether... what is their main focus this year? The constructors or the driver's title? He didn't even think about it. He said driver's title. That's our main focus this year. That's what we're going for. Mm. And that is such a different contrast from what McLaren are, because McLaren are very constructor-centered. And I understand that's where the money comes from, and I get that. But they have enough. These teams get enough money. Yeah. But let's...
Because we can kind of segue into McLaren with this, right? Yep. Because this got me thinking. You're right. They are focused on the constructors. But they don't need to be. They're going to win the constructors, right? That is going to come naturally. And there was obviously Lando coming over the radio when talking about Oscar being on old tyres. And I was thinking, I get it, by the way, like Lando doing that. I'm not berating him for this, but I would have berated the team if they had swapped the positions.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Because you didn't need first place and third place for the constructors, right? At this point, it's about who's going to win the World Drivers' Championship.
Yeah.
And you have to let those boys race for that, because that's what it comes down to. You cannot gift that to anyone.
Because if you're not careful, the likes of Max Verstappen will pick up those points and come through and win another title.
Yeah.
And he will do that. If you've got a Red Bull team who are solely focusing on a driver's title, that's where their sole focus is.
And unless you are going to prioritise a single driver, which we've seen they're not, even though some of the strategy was a little bit Lando orientated, should we say?
Well, let's touch on that, okay? Because obviously Oscar Piastri qualified, he got a pole position yesterday. Very good lap from him. Lando Norris, another difficult Saturday for him, qualifying in P4, getting outperformed by the Red Bull of Max Verstappen and George Russell. Look, I've said this before with Lando. If you want to be a world champion, you need to be consistent all weekend, and you need to put yourself in the best possible position every weekend. The reason why Max Verstappen won today is, one, he had a very quick car, granted, but he put himself in the best possible position he could do, leading him into a race
on Saturday. Yeah.
And the difficulty is Lando doesn't do that. And he openly says himself that actually he struggles on a Saturday. It needs to be better. But there's all this talk that, oh, you know, Lando's the next world champion, all of this stuff, blah, blah, blah. But actually, when he needs to put it all together, it needs to be, when you look at all the champions over the year, Lewis Hamilton, Michael Schumacher, Max Verstappen, they put it on pole, or the worst case scenario, they're the second, and they'll go and win that race. That's what a real champion does, okay?
Yeah.
This weekend, Lando didn't do that. Yes, okay, he finished P2, but okay, that's, you know, fine. But you haven't taken much from Oscar Piastri. You've taken 3 points. And yeah, it may be the difference come the end of the season, but...
No,
he needs to do better.
This weekend was the first weekend where I started thinking, maybe Oscar is the superior driver. And...
Have I not said that?
You have. But I haven't. Mm. It's not, again, it's not something that I'm like definitive on, but it was the first weekend that I started thinking it.
Yeah.
It just crossed my mind of this could be the crossover point. And I know Lando ended up beating him, but that was purely strategy. And don't get me wrong, you need luck and strategy in your favour when it comes to this, but that's not something you can rely on.
No.
Well, I think Oscar just showed that he was quicker this weekend.
Yeah. You know, Oscar said in post-race that actually the strategy didn't really work for him today. And what he's touching on is the fact that he was on the mediums. Both him and Lando started on the mediums. They pitted him on like lap 12, 13. They brought him out in so much traffic.
Yeah, it's horrendous. And it was a slow stop, like a 3.6.
It was a slow stop. They had an issue with the front right. And it was always difficult. But I think what Oscar showed today, his overtaking was brilliant. He came through that pack really well. And I think he did the best what he could. I think for him, ultimately, with the strategy, P3 is probably the best he could have hoped for. But they didn't make it easy for Oscar today. However, they made it a lot easier for Lando. And Lando had that luck with regards to the virtual safety car, where he pitted, all of that stuff. But it never made sense to me why they pitted Oscar so early. You know, he's... wasn't really catching Max. Max was in a bit of a league of his own, but he was still pumping in good laps. They didn't need to pit him so early. They could have just waited to see, because what we found with the mediums is from lap 10 to 15, it was a real struggle. But after that,
they came back.
They came back.
Life, yeah.
So I think they did a knee-jerk reaction with pitting him, and I think they were trying to, you know, get the undercut with Max. It just didn't work out for him today. And I think the difficulty is, I think what Oscar showed today was, okay, he finished P3. But I think he still came out of that looking the better driver with regards to...
He did.
Some of the overtakes were brilliant. I love the fact that Red Bull asked Yuki to hold up Oscar.
And he just couldn't.
Literally, on the first attempt, Oscar just got him.
Yeah.
But Oscar's overtakes were brilliant today. And I still think he's better placed to go on and win the championship. And
Who's your money on now, though? If you had to go and put a £100 bet on the World Drivers' Championship at this very minute, is it on Max or Oscar or Lando?
Oscar.
Really?
The way I see it at the moment, I still see Oscar, because I think the McLarens will be stronger at more tracks than Red Bull this year.
Yeah.
So, and I think when you put the McLarens, I still would put money on the fact that Oscar will pick up those points more than Lando Norris. But my order, if I'm going by the top three out of the ones you just said, would be Oscar, Max, Lando.
I think my money might be on Max.
I wouldn't be against that, because I think you can't rule out Max Verstappen when he puts in performances like this.
There's just something about him that I just think, I can't see him not winning the championship.
No, the only thing that puts me towards Oscar is simply the fact of McLaren looks strong in pretty much all circuits, and when I say strong, I mean still picking up those P2s, P3s.
They never turn up, and you're like, oh, they're having a bad weekend. Yeah. Where you see the Red Bull, and you're like, that is struggling, and Max is doing the best he can with it. I get that the car's a lot more consistent; it's a lot better.
Mm.
But I didn't think Red Bull had any right to win this weekend. But Max Verstappen turned up, and he won it for them. And that's why I think, how many more tracks is he going to do that at? Because you can't write him off.
No. And I think when you look at, you know, what Oscar has won 4 races this year, Max has won 2, Lando's won 1.
Yeah.
4, 5, 6. Yeah, that was right. 7 races, isn't it? Look, at this moment in time, my money would still be on Oscar. But I would not rule out Max Verstappen, because he is the difference. He is the difference. Do let us know. Who's your money on at the moment?
Well, top three. As we head into Monaco, do you want me to do my little bit about Monaco?
Yeah, go on.
Obviously, oh yeah, hopefully. Firstly, I hope you enjoyed the Imola Grand Prix and the little breakdown of it.
Hang on, do you want to do the standings?
Oh,
to finish off.
Right, we'll do the standings to finish off.
Oscar Piastri, 146 points. Lando Norris, 133. Mm. Max Verstappen, 124. So what's that? 22 points behind.
It's heating up.
It is.
It's heating up.
After that, you've got George Russell down in fourth with 99 points. With regards to the actual constructors, McLaren walking away with it, 279 points. Mercedes second, 147. Let me touch, just going back to what you said earlier with regards to McLaren. There will become a time where they will need to change that focus from constructors to drivers.
It's now. McLaren do not need to worry about the Constructors' Championship because they are going to win it anyway.
I did like the fact that they let them race today, though.
Yeah.
I like the fact that there was no team orders, they let them race.
They have to let them race, because this season is about who is going to win the Drivers' Championship. McLaren are going to win the Constructors' Championship.
They're on course, they could take both. Drivers and...
Yeah.
But they've got to play it smart.
What you can't do is start throwing in team orders for the constructors, because this is not a constructors battle.
Yeah.
This is a championship battle between the drivers, okay? Yeah. And you simply cannot throw in orders, because it's not going to work.
Mm.
Then if you give team orders to Piastri or Lando, like, oh, let him through, like, this will better place us for the constructors, they'll be like, fuck off, boys. Mm. We've won that. I'm not giving him the position, because this is about the drivers' championship. Yeah. And it's up to them they can try and give orders, but I don't believe Lando or Oscar are going to take team orders anymore. No. Because they've won the Constructors. Everyone knows that. Mm. They'll know it especially.
I agree. Just one quick thing regards to Imola, before we get on to Monaco. I have to say, and I've said it before, Bernie Collins is a breath of fresh air on Sky Sports. Her analysis, and even through the race today, because she was covering Anthony Davidson because he was in commentary, just her knowledge and her experience, it's just, she's great.
Do you remember when I said I love Bernie Collins and someone called me sexist?
Yeah.
Can't fucking win, can you?
I honestly think she's such a great addition.
She's a legend. She's so good.
And I have to say, Jamie Chadwick has also been a great addition, because obviously her knowledge of racing as well just comes through, and she's
dominated her category.
Yeah, but she's another person who is just interesting to listen to. Her attention to detail in her analysis is just really great.
I feel like the Sky team is in a really good place. Mm. We've got a lot of, you know, we got rid of Paul DiResta. Great. We
Johnny Herbert.
Yeah, you know what? I liked Johnny Herbert as a person. Mm. I thought as a character he was great. I actually didn't really like him as a pundit for whatever reason. Nothing personal. You know, we got Danica Patrick. That's not ideal. But if we can just get her out, I actually think we've got some really good... I want to see more of Nico Rosberg because I love Rosberg.
Yeah.
I've openly said he's my favourite.
Grid walk today, Ted Kravitz, Bernie Collins, something completely different. I didn't actually mind it. I thought it was actually pretty good.
You can't replace Martin Brundle.
No, I'm not saying you can replace him, but on races where they're not out there...
His bed is still warm.
Yeah. Crofty, do you miss him today?
We need a serious conversation about Crofty, because I'm not sure if he's hitting the mark anymore.
Look,
I'm not sure if I feel like. Did you notice it? Harry, this guy's name is. Feels weird just calling him Harry, but feel like he kind of forgot that Max was crossing the finish line and winning the race. Do you remember at the end of the race?
Yeah.
It was kind of like he was having a conversation with Anthony Davidson, and then all of a sudden he's like, oh, I'm Max Verstappen. It's like he had just seen it, and he's like, shit. but, yeah, that's the thing. I didn't miss Crofty. I did miss Martin Brundle, though.
I miss Martin Brundle. Crofty, look, he's a legend of the sport just for his commentary. He's given us some magical moments over the years. He really has. But this year, I mean, how many times have we've noticed something before he tells us? Or, you know, oh, and look, it's Charles Leclerc. Oh, no, actually, that's Lewis Hamilton. Oh, actually,
we're talking about them for ages, and we'll be like, mate, it's just the wrong driver. And it confuses fans. It does happen a bit too often. I'll tell you what, though, Sky production still, they need to up their game, because they're cutting the angles to...
Interestingly, I've had this conversation and I posted something like this and I got a massive stick. Sky, it's not from, correct me if I'm wrong here, because you guys on social media did give me a bit of stick. It's not Sky.
It's F1 TV.
It's a outsourced company who do all the what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know, but it sounds like you forgot your brain.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is what I give to that company, because they...
Production, that's what I mean.
Yes. It's like they don't understand the sport.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the example. Lewis Hamilton was trying to overtake... was it when he was trying to overtake? I can't remember who he was trying to overtake, but in the same... Oh, I think it was Antonelli, when he was trying to overtake Antonelli. And they were showing... Lando trying to overtake Oscar.
Mm.
Well, anyone with like a drop of F1 knowledge knew that at this time, Lando was too far back to overtake at this point in time, right? He was like 7.5 tenths or 8 tenths or something. You knew that after the straight, he wasn't going to be overtaking Oscar. However, Lewis was like 4.5 tenths behind. So what do? They show Oscar and Lando. We don't get an overtake. You basically miss the Kimi overtake. Yeah, do you know what I mean? It's like they don't have knowledge of the sport, so then they're not able to produce it properly.
The production has been pretty poor for a few years now.
We miss so many overtakes on track because they're showing something where it's like, we know an overtake is not going to happen here. Get it off the screen.
Yeah. No, I agree. Do let us know what your thoughts are. Did you miss Crofty? Did you miss Martin Brundle? Right, Monaco.
Yeah, before we head into Monaco, we're officially 29% of our way through the season.
How do you find that out?
Box Club. Here you go. 394 laps completed. 2,152.7 kilometres. That would get you to Mozambique.
Would it?
No, I made that part up. Oh, nice. But, but obviously we are heading to Monaco next week. And you're going to want to know the schedule, aren't you?
Yeah. Please hold caller. He's just trying to work. He's just trying to work out the actual app.
Give me a second. I'm coming, guys.
Yeah. So, what you got planned this week? Anything nice? Do let us know.
Right. Are you ready for this?
We've been ready for the last 5 minutes. What are you, part of Sky Production?
No, trust me. I've got this undercover. 3.337 kilometers, 78 laps, 19 turns, top speed of 289 kilometers per hour. And 41.95 meters elevation. Right, we've got practice one at 12:30 p.m. UK time, so adjust accordingly. Practice two at 4 p.m. Practice three at 11:30 a.m. Quali at 3 p.m. And the race is at 2 p.m. on Sunday. I will also give you some of the stats or a little quiz. Most successful constructor.
At Monaco?
Yeah.
It's McLaren, I think.
How many wins?
18?
15. Most successful driver?
Isn't it something like Ayrton Senna or something?
How many wins?
Wasn't it 5?
6 wins for Ayrton Senna. And who holds the lap record?
Charles Leclerc.
Lewis Hamilton with 1:12.9. Come on, Lewis is always going to be in these in some capacity. But should just mention before we go any further, there will not be a podcast next week.
Really?
Surely you know this. I'm in Italy.
Oh, no, I didn't know that. Good. So you found out the same time as I found out. So this is where we're so close, our slot, because
I'm flying out to Italy on Friday, definitely Friday. And then I fly back Monday night.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that, but cool.
So make sure you follow us on social media because we're going to be posting all things Monaco.
Who will be posting?
Matt is going to be posting all things Monaco.
Yeah. I mean, you very rarely see Luke do any other work.
I turn up here.
He turns up.
I edit the podcast.
Yeah, you do.
I do the thumbnail.
You do.
I upload it to Audio Boom. So
well, when you want to.
Wasn't my fault.
Okay.
But yeah, basically, I'm not here next week, but I'll be back the week after.
Good. Good to know. Thanks. That's good to know. The question is, Luke,
top three.
Whoa.
Oh.
Don't take away my line, all right? I've got it on my schedule here.
Okay.
Right, Luke.
You pointed at your leg, but your phone's there.
Yeah. Luke, who's your top three for the Monaco Grand Prix?
Max Verstappen.
You're starting to see Luke come off this Lando hype now, and it's very interesting to see.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Lewis Hamilton. And Oscar Piastri.
Interesting. Interesting. Don't quite... The Lewis Hamilton bit is interesting.
Trust me. You boys will be coming back to this saying, good call.
I'm pretty sure they won't be. My top three. Oscar Piastri. Max Verstappen. I'm going to go... Charles Leclerc.
It's so his home. Lewis one so
because
bad?
Because Lewis over the last few years hasn't done well there, all right? Charles Leclerc, it's his home track. Yeah, I think something special is going to happen.
You know, it doesn't really mean a lot that it's his home track, though. Because it's not like a track that he could drive around when he was younger.
No.
Unless he was going to the shops.
Yeah, I don't know. I just have a feeling it's going to be Charles Leclerc. Do let us know.
I do want to see something special from the Ferraris next week. I think it'd be sick. And one thing we have seen is the Ferrari's actually been quite strong around Monaco. That was where my thoughts went. But this Ferrari is a different car. I think I'd love to see Charles up there as well.
Yeah.
But for me, Max is just going to pull out the lap. And he'll qualify P1.
So it's interesting because my initial thought was to go to Max Verstappen. However, I do think Oscar Piastri's qualifying is coming on par with Max on a Saturday. And he showed that yesterday.
But if Max had that McLaren...
Yeah, no, I get where you're coming from. I don't know. I just think Oscar's qualifying is maybe not as strong as Max, but it's getting close. So I think Oscar can put in a strong lap. And my money would be on Oscar.
Should be Lando now?
Yeah, no. Yeah, I don't have confidence with him on a Saturday putting it on.
That's the interesting thing. This is all about Saturday. You know what I do? I'm expecting the Alpines to be... I think we're going to see Pierre Gasly top 10.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. It's unpredictable because from what we're hearing, weather-wise, there may be some rain expected, which Horner discussed earlier on.
Which means we won't be able to watch.
Yeah, there will be no race.
Racing this weekend if there is any rain at Monaco.
Do let us know who's your top three for the Monaco Grand Prix. I love triple headers. I love the fact if you had F1 every week, I'd be delighted.
Yeah, I agreed.
I just love it. But yeah, that is the end of the podcast. So hopefully you have enjoyed it. We won't be back next week.
But we will be the week after.
You sure?
Maybe.
Yeah. But yeah, do check us out on all social media. There will be lots of clips on TikTok. So all of our post-race reaction will be on TikTok and Instagram. So go and check us out on there. YouTube, if you're watching on YouTube, hit a like button, subscribe if you're new. If you're listening to us on Spotify, leave a 5-star rating. We really appreciate it. And you can also leave a comment on the podcast. So yeah, thank you for watching. Have a great week and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.